Hello, and welcome to this session on centralized web server configuration. My name is Seth Wolf. In this session, we'll explore the new features of Internet Information Services 7.0, which I'll refer to as IIS7 for the remainder of this session. We'll see how many of its new features can be used to create a more centralized method of web server management and configuration. Let's take a look at what we'll be covering today. This session focuses on the new tools and structures in IIS 7, which helps administrators maintain a more centralized web server configuration. We're going to start by seeing how a new group of configuration files has replaced the metabase, which was used in previous versions of IIS. Then we'll look closely at various techniques and options available in IIS 7 for building centralized web server configurations. These techniques allow you to build more robust and manageable server farms and help web hosters maintain a more stable and scalable enterprise. Then we'll see the features of the new FTP system for IIS 7 and how they can be used for administrators of corporate websites as well as web hosting companies. And finally, we'll look at the new troubleshooting tools built into IIS 7. There are many tools available, which help administrators quickly pinpoint problems and keep web servers fully operational. As with most TechNet sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. While we will explain all the new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or other versions of Microsoft products we may not spend time on. To assist you, we have listed the areas that may be helpful to be familiar with either prior to the session or the reference afterwards. Since this session covers some advanced website management techniques, it will be very helpful if you have some experience with website administration. It may also be helpful if you have some experience with IIS 6 or another version of IIS. To cover the topics mentioned on the earlier slide and to keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. We'll start with a detailed look at the new hierarchical infrastructure of IIS 7 and see how it's used to improve overall manageability. Then we'll look at the new data storage options and capabilities of IIS 7. We'll see how easy it is to centralize and deploy server configurations. And finally, we'll see some new tools and enhancements to IIS, such as FTP and troubleshooting features. IIS 7 offers a useful new feature that delegates permissions and administration of websites and applications to their managers. Before IIS 7, websites were configured primarily by the metabase. The IIS metabase presented a great deal of overhead to manage, backup, and troubleshoot. One of the biggest problems with the metabase was that it could only be accessed by administrators. This meant that if a website developer or customer in a hosted environment needed to change a setting as simple as the default document for an application, he or she either needed to be an administrator or to have to call the administrator to make the change. Another problem facing this depository is not only that it's difficult to manage, but also that it's difficult to replicate in server farms. Now, in IIS 7, the metabase has been demoted. It still exists, but it's only used for SMTP and other non-web server settings. It's been largely replaced by a group of XML configuration files that manage website configurations and structures. This new structure allows for a more open and flexible website infrastructure. IIS 7 is built on a hierarchy of distributed XML configuration files. This hierarchy is comprised of a global file called applicationhost.config, which contains server-level configuration settings. there may be a number of distributed web.config files in the application's directory structure. These are the same web.config files that are used by the ASP.NET application framework to store portable application settings. This allows the side-by-side storage of IIS and ASP.NET configuration using clean and strongly structured XML directives. In the past, IIS application settings had to be explicitly configured in the computer-level metadata. With distributed web.config files, applications encapsulate the required server configurations within their directory structure. This dramatically simplifies deployment, allowing self-contained applications to be simply copied to the target server's application directory. Microsoft is aware that there are many legacy applications that were built using the old metadata APIs, such as the Active Base Objects, or ABOs, which connect nodes in the metadata to make configuration changes. Administrators and developers should be aware that a new tool has been developed called ABO Mapper, which allows all those applications to keep running by translating those old metadata calls so that they will now modify the new configuration system. Now let's see the hierarchy of these XML config files. There are three key files that control the operation of IIS7. The first file is machine.config. This file contains the .NET framework settings for the server. In Windows Vista and Windows Server 2008, this file contains all the global settings for .NET-related components and features. These settings are inherited by all other .NET configuration files. The application host.config file contains settings for IIS and other services that have settings in common with IIS. The application host.config file is the central configuration file for the server and is where websites and application domains are defined. It includes definitions of all sites, applications, virtual directories, and application pools, as well as global defaults for the web server. Only users in the administrators group can modify the application host.config file. It has definitions for locking down most IIS sections to the global level, so that by default, they cannot be overridden by lower-level files in the hierarchy. The next file in the hierarchy is the root web.config file, which defines the global settings for properties defined for all ASP.NET web applications. This file exists for each version of the .NET framework installed on the server. This allows you to have more than one version of .NET framework running on the same server. The root web.config file contains settings that are inherited by all ASP.NET applications that run each version of the .NET framework. There may be optional web.config files in the root of the web content directories which control the behavior of that site. They may contain IIS, ASP.NET, or other .NET framework settings. Think of this as the site root for both content and site-based configuration settings. The application host.config file also resides in the server's Windows folder. But since it is tied to IIS, it is located in the inetserv config folder in System32. The web.config files are found in the root folder of each site or application. They could be local or on a remote storage device if the content directory is on a UNC share. IIS 7 offers a useful new feature that delegates permissions and administration of websites and applications to their managers. In IIS 7, delegating permissions means the ability of IIS administrators to allow non-administrators the power to change the configuration settings of sites that they manage. This means that you can give developers and website managers control of the settings for their own sites or applications. Permissions on the web.config file determine who can administer each site. The primary server administrator continues to set the global configuration settings for the web server, sites, and applications, but can now selectively allow non-administrators the ability to change certain aspects of their sites and applications. When you are delegating settings, IIS 7 allows you to finally control which sections can be changed and in what way. This significantly reduces the administration overhead and gives the site or application manager the ability to directly change settings for which they are responsible. This might include such things as enabling directory browsing, setting the default website documents, or custom-based SMTP settings. After delegation is deployed, website managers are able to configure their own websites using the web.config files in the root directories of each site or application. A key advantage of this integrated local configuration is that it streamlines the ability for developers to distribute their applications. Because the config file resides in the same folder as the application, it's easy to package it up for deployment. Then the site can be distributed and installed fully configured. With permission delegation, there are many options for web hosting customers and website managers. Customers and managers can directly edit their website's web.config file or use a browser-based tool developed by the web host. Additionally, IIS Manager can be used remotely to manage remote servers, sites, and applications. Server administrator can use the remote administration feature of IIS Manager to add user accounts and to allow those users to connect to any sites or applications for which they have permissions. After management service has been installed on the server, customers and managers can run IIS Manager on their remote computer or manage their own websites, all through a secure, firewalled system. Now let's see how to delegate these permissions. Our demo environment consists of one web server. Let's move on to our first demonstration. The IIS Manager can be used by non-administrators to maintain their sites or applications. In this demonstration, we'll delegate IIS management and features to a non-administrator. In this demonstration, we'll see how easy it is to use the new IIS Manager to delegate website management features. Delegation allows non-administrators to remotely use the IIS Manager to manage their own sites or applications. No websites have been configured on this server yet, so we'll start this demonstration by configuring a website. Adding a new website is easy. All the necessary basic options are right here on the Add Website dialog box. The first step is naming the new site. We'll call our default website Contoso. The files for our default website are stored in the folder www.root. This site will use standard HTTP port bindings, so we'll use the main HTTP port, port 80. Let's group the IIS Manager features by category to make it easier to find what we need. We'll use the IIS Manager to enable remote administrators, such as application managers and website managers, to use the IIS Manager to maintain their own systems. We'll start by enabling remote connections for the server. Remote IIS management can be deployed for Windows Active Directory users or both Windows users and users configured on the server. By default, the logs of remote connections are stored in the WM service folder, but the logs can be relocated to another folder or in a local directory or UNC share. For added security, restrictions can be maintained by IP address. Right now, we'll allow all users on all domains and IPs. Because our server is not part of an Active Directory infrastructure, we'll set it up for users that we'll configure on the server. In a real-world environment, it would probably be best to maintain these users in an Active Directory environment. The management service is stopped by default. Let's start the Windows Management Service. Now, we need to add a user for the IIS Manager. There aren't any users configured yet, so I'll launch the Add Users dialog box. I'll add the user account and call it Test. We'll use our standard admin password here. We need to confirm the password, too. We've started our Windows Management Service and set up our user. Let's get into how to configure and delegate the features of IIS Manager. This list shows all the features that can be configured for delegation. We'll group our settings by how they are currently configured for delegation. Features can be configured as read-write, which means they are fully delegated. They can be configured as read-only, which means that the delegate can see the settings but cannot modify them. Or features can be configured as not delegated, which means that the user could not modify nor see the settings. Let's take a look at that modules tool. It's currently set for read-write. Let's change it, making it read-only. As shown in this alert, permissions for the IIS Manager cannot be granted at the server level. We'll have to go back and select our website, and we can delegate permissions at that level. Now that we've selected the Contoso website, we can launch the IIS Manager permissions tool and set it to allow users to use the delegated features. We have a choice of selecting a Windows user or a user defined in IIS Manager. So we select the IIS Manager user that we defined earlier. Let's select our user. Our test user account is not a Windows Active Directory user account. It's the one that we created in the IIS Manager. And now the account has been added to the list. This Create New Connections button allows us to connect to a server, connect to a website, or connect to an application. Let's connect to our default website. We'll use localhost for the server name and connect to the Contoso website on this server. The credentials needed for this connection are what we set up earlier. The username is test, and the password is our standard admin password. The wizard indicates that we created the connection successfully. If we look in the Connections pane, we see the new connection. Let's examine our new connection. Remember, this connection is now available to remote users of the IIS Manager and is easily tunneled through Port 80. The modules feature is still available to us in our remote connection, but the alert indicates that this feature has been locked. This is because it was configured to read only in the features delegation. Let's return to our server and launch the feature delegation. We change the module's delegation from read only to not delegated. When we return to our remote connection and open the module's feature, we get an error message. The system informs us that it could not retrieve the list of modules because the feature has been configured as not delegated. Now let's return to our presentation. Next, we'll see some of the flexible data storage capabilities in IIS 7. We'll see how easy it is to centralize and deploy server configurations and how backup and restore processes have been improved. We'll start with a look at the many network storage options available for an IIS 7 enterprise. Storage area networks, network attack storage, and iSCSI devices can all be deployed as UNC shares and can be easily configured as storage devices in an IIS 7 web server enterprise. Microsoft Windows Unified Data Storage Server, a WUDS, includes the Microsoft iSCSI software target technology, which provides an iSCSI SAN solution, which leverages the existing Ethernet infrastructure. Server farms can use hardware such as high-speed backbones and failover redundancy to build web service systems that are fast and resilient. IIS 7 and its simplified XML configuration files make it easy to use these devices to create high-availability web service systems. These network storage options can be used for implementing centralized configuration. Web farms or server clusters have become the industry standard in delivering highly scalable, available, and manageable applications by distributing load. A web farm can provide a scalable way to increase the capability of the user base by increasing concurrent access to the application and its resources. A group of servers can provide improved availability by having multiple machines distributing the load, increasing the number of concurrent users it can handle at a time. Web hosts will find that by using centralized configurations, they can increase flexibility in managing their customer base. They can easily move customers' sites from one server to another, implementing convenient backup plans and reduced overall downtime. It is easy to export the necessary configuration files from the local machine to another location like a UNC share. Then, by enabling configuration redirection, a group of servers can share the same XML configuration. The shared centralized global configuration features in IIS 7 help support homogeneous web farms where machines share the same configuration. By using a UNC share for centralized configuration, a change in the central master configuration file will propagate across different machines without extra tools or programmatic support. Let's see a demonstration on how to deploy centralized configurations. In this demonstration, we'll look at the basis for using centralized shared configurations in an enterprise. We'll export the web service config files, and then we'll reconfigure that server to use these remote configurations. IIS 7 includes support for setting up redirected shared configuration files, and then enabling these shared configurations. The IIS manager provides support for exporting the configuration files and the necessary encryption keys to a specified path or UNC share. To export the necessary configuration files from the local machine to another location, on the action pane, click Export Configuration. In the Export Configuration dialog box, type the path where you want the exported files to go. You also have to type a password, which will protect the encryption keys that are also exported. Any server, even this local server, will need to access these remote configuration files. The next step is to enable configuration redirection on the server. To do this, select the Enable Shared Configuration checkbox. You must specify the path where the configuration and the encryption keys are located, and also specify the credentials used to access that path. After the path and credentials have been entered, IIS Manager will ensure that the necessary files exist at the specified location, and if they do, it will ask for the password that was used to password protect the encryption keys. Now type the name and password for the administrator. Before these settings can be applied, the existing IIS encryption keys need to be backed up. We'll need to restart the IIS manager before we can use the new shared configuration files. But before we start up the IIS manager again, let's open Windows Explorer and use it to take a look at the shared configuration files. The shared configuration files are stored on the E drive. For this demo, it's been set up as a local drive on this computer. But in a real-world scenario, it would most likely use a NAS or iSCSI device as a UNC share. Here is the administration.config file, the important application host.config file, and the configuration encryption keys. The IIS manager exports and imports items such as password-protected encryption keys, using its own custom format. If you were to manually copy the administration.config and the application host.config files to a share, and then manually export the encryption keys, you would not be able to use the IIS manager to set up configuration redirection. This is because the required encryption keys would not be in the format that the IIS manager requires. Let's restart the IIS manager and then navigate over to the server. Nothing looks different here. But internally, the server is now using the remote config files stored on the E drive. Let's modify our default document list. We'll add a uniquely named file to the list. When looking through our config file, it will be hard to miss a file named sharedconfig.html. Let's go back to our remote configuration files. We'll open the application host.config file in Notepad and look for the default documents section. Scrolling down to the default documents section, we see the shared config.html tag at the top of the list. In a real-world scenario, these config files would be relocated to a remote storage device. We can then deploy additional IIS servers and have them all set up to use the same set of shared config files, resulting in efficient management infrastructure. Let's restore our IIS server to using local configuration files before continuing. Last on our agenda is a look at some additional tools and enhancements built into IIS 7. The new IIS 7 XML config files make it easy to create quick snapshots of websites and configurations. Administrators can use XCopy to make copies of website data files and their underlying config files. However, it's always best to back up an IIS 7 server using the Windows Backup tool that backs up permissions. You can use a different backup tool as long as it's fully Windows compatible and backs up all permissions and system files. By using a comprehensive backup tool like Windows Server Backup, you can be assured that all the necessary website data, folders, folder permissions, folder contents, folder permissions, and FTP configurations are fully backed up. Remember, if you are using Active Directory to manage users and user rights, it's also necessary to back up the Active Directory configuration, and server configuration as well. More importantly, since website configuration file is stored in the site root, it is easy to duplicate or migrate sites to new servers. Just use XCopy or similar scripting concepts to move the new site root, and all the necessary application, data, and config files will be correctly deployed on the new server. Let's see how easy it is to do this. In this demonstration, we'll see different techniques for backing up web servers, websites, and website configurations. appcommand.exe is a command line tool for managing IIS 7 servers, sites, and configurations. It exposes all key server management functionality through a set of intuitive objects that can be manipulated from the command line or a script. appcommand enables automation of server management tasks like creating sites or virtual directories without writing complex code. Typing appcommand without any arguments will display a detailed list of objects, commands, and parameters. appcommand module provides for administration of server modules. The /?? Switch will display detailed help information about the supported commands. appcommand list module will display all the modules currently installed on the server. The backup object provides a flexible means to manage backups of all the critical IIS 7 XML config files. If we list the backups, we see that we don't have any backups currently set up on the server. It's easy to add new backups to our system. We'll call this one First Backup. Now, if we list the currently deployed backups, we'll see that this new one has been added. Switching over to Windows Explorer, we see that the App Command backups are conveniently stored in the Backup folder under iNetServe. And here is the first backup that we just created. Let's create a minor disaster for the IIS server. Let's delete the application host.config file from the config folder. Now, let's try restarting the IIS manager, and then we'll attempt to browse our websites. However, because the main application host.config file has been deleted, we get an error message telling us that the IIS manager cannot read the configuration file. Let's use the app command restore backup first backup command line to restore our missing application host.config file. It's important to use a full-service backup tool to perform complete regular backups of your web servers. This will require a tool like Windows Server Backup, which creates complete backups of all the critical Windows Server 2008 system files and settings. This wizard is a convenient way of creating a one-time backup. However, a full backup plan should be in place to prepare for disasters. We'll briefly go through the options here, selecting a full server backup on this page. Windows Server Backup allows the backup files to be written to a local drive or a remotely shared folder. If you decide to write the backup file to a remote folder, you can specify the UNC location here. This is just a brief look at using the Windows Server Backup tool. Let's cancel this wizard and return to our presentation. Last on our agenda is a look at some additional tools and enhancements built into IIS 7. We'll now see some other new tools and enhancements to IIS, such as FTP and advanced troubleshooting features. We'll start with a look at the new IIS 7 FTP capabilities. The new FTP service has been completely rewritten for Windows Server 2008 and IIS 7. FTP incorporates many new features that enable web authors to publish content easier than before, and offers web administrators more security and deployment options. The new FTP service is fully integrated with IIS 7 and the IIS Manager, making management and configuration of FTP access simple and easy. The new FTP service supports next-generation Internet standards such as UTF-8, which is an extension to standard Unicode, supporting variable-length character encoding. The new FTP service also supports IPv6, which offers many enhancements to IPv4, such as larger address space, network layer security, and stateless auto-configuration of hosts. By fully integrating into IIS 7, the new FTP server makes it possible to host FTP and web content from the same site by simply adding an FTP binding to an existing website. This has previously been an involved, time-consuming process. Administrators had to manually point the website root folder to the site owner's FTP root. It is now greatly simplified and fully integrated into the FTP management process. This is particularly helpful to hosters because it simplifies customer content publication scenarios. Customers have full access to the FTP site and simply upload their changes to their website at any time. Through IIS 7, FTP Server supports extensibility. This makes it possible for software vendors to write custom FTP authentication modules with the ASP.NET membership system or any other custom authentication store. FTP logging has been enhanced to include all FTP-related traffic, unique tracking for FTP sessions, FTP substatuses, and additional detail fields in FTP logs. The FTP server also logs detailed information using event tracing for Windows, which provides additional detailed troubleshooting information. Next, we'll see some enhancements to FTP that will be of particular interest to managers of web hosting services. In addition to FTP site binding, there are additional enhancements to FTP that managers of web hosting services will find particularly useful. The new IIS 7 FTP server now includes secure publishing with FTP SSL support. Integrated authentication has been added so that delegated administrators can use their Active Directory credentials to publish to IIS 7 websites. There is added support for Web Manager authentication and ASP.NET membership authentication. This enables web hosts to use non-Windows accounts to authenticate FTP users. This also includes built-in basic authentication, which is especially useful when it's combined with the new command line tools, FTPS, to secure the web user's credentials. The new FTP system has improved user isolation settings. The FTP user isolation module allows administrators to easily set how users are isolated and which default directory to access when they first log onto the server. In earlier versions of FTP, administrators had to create a physical directory for each account. This is no longer necessary. With the new FTP, users can be set to start in a home or virtual directory and easily prevented from accessing the home directories of another user. There is also added support for virtual host name, which is similar to host headers for FTP sites. By using hostname support, IIS 7 allows the hosting of multiple FTP sites, each with a different domain names on the same IP address. Let's take a close look at some of these features. In this demonstration, we'll examine the new FTP module for IIS 7 web server and a few of its many new features and enhancements. Microsoft has created a new FTP service that has been completely rewritten for Windows Server 2008 and IIS 7. This new FTP service incorporates many new features that enable web authors to publish content more easily than before and offers web administrators more security and better deployment options. FTP for IIS 7 offers both anonymous and basic authentication methods. In addition, FTP authentication may be extended with custom providers. The IIS Manager authorization and the ASP.NET authorization custom providers are provided. FTP for IIS 7 offers some basic enhancements to FTP directory browsing. Here are the options for both MS-DOS and Unix-style listings. Options include virtual directories, available bytes, and 4-digit years when browsing FTP directories. FTP logging is an important tool for tracking FTP site usage. It's easy to change the fields, directory, and encoding for your FTP site logs. Monitoring the size of your log files is also important, so your disk capacity doesn't become overwhelmed. There are many options to manage FTP log file sizes in this section. There are many fields available for FTP log files, offering a great deal of flexibility. Let's add the fields for bytes sent and bytes received to the log files. There are several options available for FTP message behavior. You can suppress the default banners. There is support for user variables and FTP messages. There is also a new feature in FTP for IIS 7, which displays more detailed messages for local FTP requests. Let's add support for user variable in messages, and then create a new welcome message that uses the username variable. This simple message just welcomes the user by name. FTP for IIS 7 allows you to create complex advanced SSL requirements and configurations. Separate settings can be deployed for the control and data channels. This might prove useful for specialized data servers and authentication scenarios. Let's allow for SSL connections, which we'll look at a little more later on. Let's switch to our Contoso website and look at the site's bindings. The Contoso site is only configured with HTTP port 80 binding right now. Let's add FTP publishing to the Contoso website. We'll use the standard FTP port 21 for FTP publishing. One of the new features of FTP service for IIS 7 is the ability to configure virtual host names, which enables web hosters to configure multiple FTP sites on a single IP address. For this part of our demonstration, we will not use a host name, so we'll leave the virtual host field blank. We are not going to use SSL for this site either, so we won't select an SSL certificate. The Require SSL checkbox is cleared because we changed the default setting earlier in the demonstration when we switched the server's FTP SSL settings from Require SSL Connections to Allow SSL Connections. When we set our server's FTP default settings, we enabled anonymous authentication, but left basic authentication disabled. If necessary, we can override those defaults here. Let's finish configuring the FTP settings by allowing anonymous users and granting them read-only access. After refreshing the Contoso homepage, we now have all the features necessary for managing the FTP bindings for our Contoso site. Switching over to the Sites page, you see that FTP bindings have now been added to the Contoso site. Let's launch the command prompt and use the command line FTP program to test the new FTP settings on the default site. We'll start by using the FTP command to connect to the local host. Then we'll log in as an anonymous user and offer our email address as the password. The system successfully logged us in and displayed the custom welcome message. Notice that it used the anonymous username in the welcome message. We'll enter the standard DIR command to request a directory listing of the website. Let's exit the FTP program and return to the IIS manager. Now, we'll return to our site's FTP settings and basic authentication. This will allow us better manage and track FTP users. After enabling basic authentication, it is necessary to configure the authorization rules to allow the user onto the FTP site. There are many options available. Access to be granted to all users, all anonymous users, specific roles, specific user groups, or specific users. Let's allow authorization to the administrator account. We'll give this account full read-write access. Let's restore the command prompt and then log back in to the default FTP site. This time, we'll log in as an administrator. The system grants access and greets us with the correct username. This time, we're given full read-write access. We'll delete this file. We'll now quit the FTP program and restore Windows Explorer. Let's examine our FTP log files. We can access the log files from the IIS Manager by clicking View Logs in the FTP logging feature. Let's open the FTP log file in Notepad. Here we see the details of our two FTP sessions. There are the connection request, the listing requests, and the exiting requests. And we see where we logged in using the anonymous user authentication and then requested a directory listing. Then we logged in as the server's administrator and deleted the junk file. Let's close things up here, and then we'll take a look at FTP user isolation. FTP user isolation prevents users from accessing the FTP home directories of another user on the same FTP site. If FTP user isolation is not deployed, there are two options for starting FTP users when they connect. The default option is to have all users starred in the FTP root folder. This option is new in this FTP server and simply disables all user isolation or starling folder logic. Alternately, you can have each user start in their named directory. However, without any user isolation, users can easily change directories and freely navigate around the FTP site. There are three options available when employing FTP user isolation. Selecting Active Directory FTP home directories works exactly as it did in earlier versions of FTP. It specifies that you want to isolate FTP user sessions to the home directory that is configured in the Active Directory account settings for each FTP user. The username physical directory with the global virtual directories enabled option is backwards compatible and works the same way it did in IIS 6. Under your FTP root directory, you first create a physical local users directory, and then you create physical directories for each FTP user. Users are then isolated in these physical directories. However, any virtual directories that are created for that site are visible to all users that connect to it. Username directory is a new option that specifies that you want to isolate FTP user sessions to the physical or virtual directory with the same name as the FTP user account. The user sees only their FTP root location and is therefore restricted from navigating higher up the physical or virtual directory tree. Any global virtual directories that are created will be ignored. Now let's try isolating FTP users within physical directories. To create home directories for each user, you'll first need to create a physical directory in the FTP server's root folder that is named after your domain or local user. Next, you need to create a physical directory for each user account that will access your FTP site. We'll first create an account for anonymous users. This folder is called Public. Now we'll create a folder for the administrator FTP user. Let's put a couple of files into our new directories. Now we'll connect to our default FTP site. We'll first log in using anonymous credentials, and we'll use an email address as the password. When we look at the user isolated directory, we see the public file .txt that was put into the public folder. Now we'll log in using basic authentication. We'll use the administrator credentials. When we request a directory listing, we see the admin file that we placed in the administrator folder. Let's exit this session and take a look at using FTP over SSL. This is IT Pro, ITE-303-DEMO4-4 in 3, 2, 1. Creating a secure FTP site is very easy in IIS 7. First, let's go over to the server certificate settings. This certificate is set up for the Windows Management Services and is used for remote administration. So we'll go ahead and create a new certificate. Let's quickly create a self-signed SSL certificate. All we really need to do is to enter a friendly name for our certificate. Let's call it FTP certificate. That's all there is to it. You can see our new self-signed SSL certificate listed in the server certificates list. Now let's reconfigure our FTP site to require SSL connections. Let's go into the SSL settings for the Contoso site. We'll use the self-signed SSL certificate that we just created. Now, when we try to log in, our FTP login is rejected before we even have a chance to enter a password. The FTP server recognizes that we attempted to connect using a non-SSL-enabled FTP client, and so it quickly rejected our connection request. Notice that the FTP server offers detailed information about the reason our connection was rejected. This is because we configured our FTP server to show detailed messages for both local requests. There are many more features in FTP 7, but that's all we have time for to cover today. IIS 7 introduces a number of new features to help monitor and debug application problems. One of the most important new troubleshooting tools is the Runtime Status and Control API, which is commonly referred to as RISCA. It is designed to give detailed runtime information about the server from deep within IIS 7. The RISCA API is a new programmatic interface for accessing and manipulating the runtime state of the websites and application pools, application domains, worker processes, and it even allows you to view the currently executing requests. The RISCA capabilities come in very handy when you're investigating server issues or tuning server performance, both for being able to quickly see what's going on in the system, as well as to control the server when performing troubleshooting. The RISCA API is accessible through the GUI IIS Manager and appcommand.exe. You can use these tools to easily see such critical functions as the processes and requests currently being executed on the server. IIS 7 makes it possible to troubleshoot failures without having to manually reproduce them. The failed request tracing feature enables server administrators to predefine error conditions to monitor. This allows administrators to capture trace logs for a pre-configured failure condition automatically, all while avoiding the performance penalty of saving logs for all requests. With failed request tracing, administrators can capture the valuable tracing information when errors occur, even if they are intermittent or hard to reproduce. Error conditions can range from slow or hung requests to the familiar status codes IIS sends back during error conditions, like server 500 error. When configured, if IIS 7 detects an error condition, it can automatically log detailed trace events of everything that happened during the request which led up to the error. This might prove to be very helpful to web hosters who manage many sites. If a web host notices a specific error affecting one of their sites, they could easily deploy failed request tracing to all their sites, monitoring for the same error. This would help them better avoid failures and maintain high availability. The underlying tracing infrastructure is exposed to IIS modules using the Server Extensibility Module, allowing all server components, whether they ship with IIS or are developed by third parties, to relay detailed tracing information during request processing. This allows developers and system administrators to create custom managed modules to take advantage of the new unified tracing model. Developers can now write tracing modules that provide new ways to process and output traces, like a module to save IIS tracing information to a SQL server or to a text file. The new IIS 7 Custom Errors module allows for more detailed error information to be sent back to the web browser. It is set up by default for local requests and can be easily configured to provide the same features to remote clients. Instead of just seeing a concise error message, you'll now see detailed information about the error and helpful suggestions on how to resolve it. Detailed error messages are turned on by default for all local users, so there is nothing to configure or set up for them. Detailed error messages offer plain language explanations of what might have caused the error and detailed instructions on suggested ways to fix them. Let's see how you can use these tools in practice. In this demonstration, we will use the Runtime Status and Control API, as well as failed request tracing, and to analyze detailed error messages to diagnose problems with websites, applications, and servers. The Runtime Status and Control API, or RISCA, is designed to give detailed runtime information about the server from deep within IIS 7. The RISCA capabilities are handy when you are investigating server issues or tuning server performance, both for being able to quickly see what's going on in the system and to control the server when performing troubleshooting. Let's go over to our music folder to browse and download a music file. This folder has directory browsing enabled, so we can view all the files stored here that are available for downloading. We'll click the top music file and initiate a request to download the file from the website. Internet Explorer has not been pre-configured to manage music files, so it doesn't know what to do with this file. It's prompting us to either save the file or to find a program to load it. This request will remain open and pending until the client finishes the request or the server cancels it. The RISCA API is accessible through the IIS Manager and appcommand.exe. Let's use the app command to access the RISCA API in order to query the current pending server requests. We do this by typing appcommand list requests. This displays the currently executing requests. This command provides us with some useful information. It displays which client the request is coming from, the requested URL, the type of HTTP request, and how long the request has been running. However, some production servers may have hundreds or thousands of requests coming in at the same time. If we got a list that long, it would be difficult to find the request that we are interested in. To make it easy to retrieve the requests we are interested in, appcommand allows us to filter the requests by a number of different parameters. For example, we can filter current requests to list those that are taking a long time to process. To do this, we use the elapsed option. This command shows us the requests that are taking longer than 100 milliseconds to process. Typically, you'd want to specify closer to 1,000 milliseconds. But this shows that you can specify any amount of time you want. Using the elapsed parameter is a quick and easy way to isolate long-running requests from the rest of the website's traffic. We can also use the IIS Manager to view the RISCA real-time requests. First, launch the Worker Process feature, which lists the worker processes currently running in the application pools on the server. There is only one worker process currently running in our demo environment. The server is currently running one application pool. It has very low CPU usage and is consuming about 5 megabytes of private memory within about 57 megabytes of virtual address space. The action pane has an option to view current requests. After selecting this option, we see our current pending music file request download. Let's request another music file. Again, this web browser doesn't have any default method of dealing with this file type, so it prompts us with a download option. After refreshing the file list, we now see two files listed in the current request list. Let's cancel the two downloads. When we refresh the current requests page, the pending requests are removed. Now we'll look at automatic failed request tracing. In this demonstration, we're going to add a simple website, configure IIS so that requests to this page fails, and then use automatic failed request tracing to identify the problem. Here is a simple ASP page called default.asp. All it does is write out today's date using the date function. Let's switch over to Internet Explorer and load this page. It correctly shows today's date. For the next part of this demonstration, we are going to configure IIS to ensure that requests to this page will fail. To do this, we are going to go to the Security section and select IIS API and CGI Restrictions. Here we can specify the ASP and CGI features that can be used on this server. We'll disable active server pages. Let's return to the web browser and refresh the ASP page. The page now returns an error. In IIS 7, you can enable failed request tracing. You must enable failed request tracing on a per-website basis. You first select the website, in this case, the default website, and then you enable tracing. When configuring failed request tracing, you first enable it, and then you can choose to change where the trace logs are stored and how many logs you keep before they are recycled. If you don't modify where the tracing logs are stored, it's still a good idea to take note of the default directory, as this is where you need to go to find your trace logs. We'll leave these settings at the default values for now. Next, we need to create a rule that will match the failure received when requesting our ASP page. First, open up the Failed Request Tracing Rules feature and add a new rule. We want to make the rule match as closely as possible to the type of request that fails. On a busy server, this can be very important, as it will limit the number of requests that need tracing. In this case, we are only interested in ASP content, so we'll select ASP and click Next. Then, we specify the status codes that we wish to trace. In this case, we are only interested in the 404 status codes. If you wish, you can specify multiple status codes in a comma-separated list. Also notice, if you do not specify an error status subcode, then it will match all subcodes. In addition, you can choose to trace based on the amount of time when the request takes, rather than on the status code. This is very useful when your request is delayed or hangs, but you do not get a status code back. Then, you can narrow down the requests that are traced by the trace provider and the activity taking place. Removing unwanted providers will reduce the trace file size and help pinpoint the event you are looking for. You can also specify how much detail you want to include in the trace. We will leave it at the verbose default value. Now that we have created a trace definition, we can return to our browser and refresh the web page. This should produce a failed request log. Let's open the failed request log and examine its contents. In the failed request log files folder, there is a subfolder for every website on the server. Therefore, if you have failed request tracing enabled for multiple websites on your server, then the tracing requests for each website will go into individual folders. This is the first trace, with subsequent traces numbered sequentially. Because the log is an XML format, we could use a number of different XML parsers to view or process the output. To make it easier for you to view these files, there are standard style sheets for failed request log files that are bundled with IIS 7. When you use these style sheets, you can easily see the information contained in the log files. Right at the top, the diagnostic page lists the requested URL. It also tells us the reason for the failure in the status code. In this case, the status code that we find in the log file is 404.2, which matches the trace filter that we created earlier. The errors and warnings section lists the actual errors or warnings that led to the conditions that triggered the log. In the error and warnings section, you will usually find the cause of the problem. In this case, the log has defined the cause of the problem as the security is denied by an IIS API restriction. Additional information is found in the next event. We see here that there is a problem with one of the modules, and that was blocked by the server administrator. Here are the details of the request that led to the error condition. This section lists the complete verbose request trace. Scrolling through the log, you'll see all the steps that led up to the warning condition that caused the page failure and then triggered the log. The performance view shows the event steps and highlights the sorts of events by the length of time they take to complete. This view would be very useful to debug errors caused by excessive request time taken to complete. The authentication authorization section is more useful in this particular scenario, as it summarizes and filters the authentication and authorization events. If the problem is not clear from the errors and warnings section, you can scroll down the Compact View Trace Detail. In this section, you'll find every trace message, every key event in the request pipeline is recorded in the trace log, from the beginning of the request right through to the end of the request. The trace includes the request starting event, and here's the request to get the URL metadata and permissions. And then the ASP module in which the error occurred. Following the error, the trace also logs the events that take place in returning error information to the browser. In this case, the error information is the 404.2 status code. The web server sends the custom error message with the HTTP error status codes back to the web browser. Now let's return to the website with the error page. Let's refresh the page. And when we return to the tracing logs, we see that another file has been added to the folder because another error was generated when we refreshed the page. Now we'll take a close look at the detailed error messages. The new detailed error messages for IIS 7 offers a comprehensive analysis of the error conditions and offers useful suggestions on how to resolve them. This could compromise your system security because these pages contain information about the inner workings of your web server. Only trusted personnel should see these detailed error pages. The only way to ensure this is to only generate the detailed error pages for requests that come from the local machine. The Things You Can Try section offers techniques to fix the problem. First, it explains that you need to verify that the requested web service extension is enabled on the server. The steps offered are laid out neatly and orderly, telling you exactly what you need to do to resolve the problem. The first step is to first open the IIS Manager and navigate to the server. Then, start the IIS API and CGI restrictions feature. Then, make sure that the proper extensions are listed. If not, there are instructions on how to add it. Otherwise, make sure that the needed extension is allowed. After we allow the active server page extension, the website loads correctly. Let's load a different folder on our default website. This one contains a series of sample images. Right at the top, we see that there is a problem with the site. The general error message tells us that the directory is not set up for browsing. Once again, the error message gives us detailed instructions on how to fix the problem by enabling directory browsing using the IIS Manager. the instruction state to first open the IIS Manager, then launch directory browsing. Then, in the Actions pane, to click Enable. Now that the error has been resolved, we can browse the directory files. That just about does it. Let's return to the presentation. That just about wraps up this session. Let's review what we've seen today. IIS 7 features a new hierarchical collection of XML config files that replaces the metabase used in previous versions of IIS. The use of this new file structure greatly improves manageability, portability, and server deployment. There are many different tools and techniques available for managing IIS 7, including a GUI management console, the new Windows PowerShell, and even direct text file editing. IIS 7 features a more flexible network storage options, employing such devices as NAS, SANs, and iSCSI drives. These devices can be used to provide centralized web configuration storage, which helps maintain high availability in a multiple server enterprise. These devices may also be used to create a comprehensive backup plan. There are many new troubleshooting tools available in IIS 7, such as the RISC server monitor, the failed request tracing feature, and detailed error messages. These tools can help administrators quickly pinpoint errors and provide high availability systems. To get more information on the products and technologies we have covered today, we have some online resources available that can help you. For the most comprehensive technical information about Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/technet. Additionally, visit www.microsoft.com/technet/ITE-303 for more information about books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available for Microsoft. These include a number of books that can help you better understand performance tuning of your web hosting solutions. One of these is Inside Microsoft SQL Server 2005, Query Tuning and Optimization. Understanding the internals of SQL Server helps database developers and administrators to better create, access, and effectively process information from enterprise data. Written by experts on SQL Server, this volume from Inside Microsoft SQL Server series of books focuses on query tuning and optimization. You'll take an in-depth look at the best ways to make queries more efficient and effective while maximizing existing resources. The shift from standalone desktop applications to web-enabled applications that accommodate hundreds of thousands of simultaneous users makes performing testing critical. Find out how to make your Microsoft.NET-based application perform as well as or better than traditional desktop applications with this book, Performance Testing Microsoft.NET Web Applications, written by the Microsoft team that tests and tunes hundreds of websites and web-based applications. Get a jump on evaluating Windows Server 2008. With technical insights from the Windows Server team in introducing Windows Server 2008. This practical introduction delivers real-world implementation scenarios and pragmatic advice for administering Windows Server in the enterprise. There are also a number of good books from other publishers. Professional IIS 7, published by ROX, is a complete reference to IIS 7, both for developers and administrators. In addition to covering the common administrative tasks, this book will take an in-depth look at IIS 7 extensibility and operations management. IIS 7 Implementation and Administration, published by Cybex, is designed to ease the learning curve for experienced system administrators and IT professionals, helping them work with developers using the new tools of IIS 7. It concentrates on the crucial skills needed to get up and running quickly using the new product. This book begins by explaining the new interface and basic IIS configuration, and then moves on to ASP.NET configuration. Readers will come to understand the new security model and learn how to work with developers to improve application performance. How to Cheat at IIS 7 Server Administration, published by Cygress, will help administrators migrating from IIS 6 to get up to speed fast on the new version. IIS 7 is the perfect product for the How to Cheat series. How to Cheat promises to help you get IIS 7 up and running as quickly as possible. Professional IIS 7 and ASP.NET 2.0 Integrated Programming, published by ROX, explores the deep integration of the ASP.NET 2.0 with IIS 7. It provides ASP.NET 2.0 developers with new, exciting programming tools, techniques, and approaches that were not available before. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, which includes e-learning, MS Press books, workshops, clinics, and Microsoft Skills Assessment. This curriculum is offered in instructor-led environments. It offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals, support, and implement solutions using Microsoft product and technologies. The course that best supports the session is 6045, which covers administering IIS 7 web servers and is available as an online course. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There is also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills for implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which is links to Microsoft Official Curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Press books, and other Microsoft Learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the ability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with a basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP. You can become a fully certified System Administrator, MCSA, or System Engineer, MCSE, or a Desktop Specialist, MCDST. The new Microsoft Certified Technology Specialist, MCTS, and Microsoft Certified IT Professional, MCITP, credentials provide IT professionals with a simpler and more targeted framework to showcase their technical skills in addition to skills that are required for specific job roles. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which you may find interesting. To help explain this further, here's Ian Brackenberry, TechNet Subscription Product Manager.
TechNet Plus is an essential, premium, web-enabled, and live support resource that provides IT professionals with fast and easy access to Microsoft experts, software, and technical information, enhancing IT productivity, control, and planning. With convenient access to all these resources in one online location, TechNet Plus provides you with what you need to help you evaluate products and learn new skills, plan for and deploy new technologies, and support and maintain your IT environment. For evaluation and learning, you get access to all Microsoft full version software for evaluation without time limits. This includes Microsoft Server, client, and application software titles. With full version software, you can make informed decisions about new technologies at your own pace. You also receive access to the latest betas before public release. Be the first to try out the latest pre-release versions of Microsoft operating systems, servers, and business applications. TechNet Plus also offers quarterly training resources, including select Microsoft e-learning courses for free, so you can keep your skills current, prepare for a certification exam, or get ready for a specific project. For planning and deployment, the TechNet Library includes resources to help you plan for and deploy new technologies in your IT environment, including a complete knowledge base, resource kits, utilities, and technical training. You also get exclusive tools like System Center Capacity Planner to accurately plan for and deploy Exchange Server and System Center Operations Manager. And to stay informed, your subscription also includes a free subscription to TechNet Magazine, the Microsoft Journal for IT Professionals. For support and maintenance, TechNet Plus comes with two complimentary professional support incidents. You can talk to a Microsoft support professional to quickly resolve your mission-critical technical issues fast. TechNet Plus also provides access to over 100 managed news groups. You can exchange ideas with other professionals and get expert answers to your technical questions within the next business day, guaranteed. You also get access to TechNet Library resources to help you support and maintain your IT environment, including security updates and service packs. TechNet Plus offers proven value that far exceeds its cost. The two complimentary professional support incidents alone more than offset the cost of a TechNet Plus subscription. Add to that the evaluation software and beta software and other technical resources, and TechNet Plus clearly boosts productivity. Every IT professional on the team needs one. For more information or to purchase a TechNet Plus subscription, please visit technet.microsoft.com/subscriptions.